it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to another edition of Better Living, a show about people or organizations having a big impact here in North Texas. I'm your host, Chris Arnold of 105.3 The Fan, and my first guest is a longtime friend. He is a legend in himself, but more importantly, he is a major entrepreneur and businessman. Willis Johnson, the CEO of JBJ Management, a vibrant award-winning company that has for 30 years connected clients, consumers, and community with multiple city and county business projects here in North Texas. Willis J., how you doing?
Good morning, Chris. Always glad to be with you.
Well, first of all, I want to say I went to your website. That is a mind-blowing, impressive website. I see a lot of different websites, you know, in the different world of business, in the world of nonprofits, in the world of, you know, entertainment. Your website really is impressive. It's like the city of Dallas should do that for their website.
we'll do it for them if they let us.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Well, first of all, again, congratulations on 30 years. Can you believe JBJ Management has been around 30 years now?
It's kind of an overlap. No, I can't. It all started with not getting an invoice and a requisition approved by Chuck Smith.
Hold on. Let me tell people who Chuck Smith is. He is a legend in himself. He is the station manager. The late, great Chuck Smith was a station manager of KKDA and K104 FM and 105.7 KRMB.
Mm-hmm. And it was that day in 1995. It's two things. That day when he said, you worry about the morning show. I'm going to take care of the station. And then Ron Kirk was elected mayor.
Mm-hmm.
Those two things actually sparked a fire for me to start JBJ Management. I named it after my oldest son, but I didn't know he was going to be a football player. He was my son, so I named it after him.
Not just a football
player. That's how it all started.
Let's just say hook 'em horns. he is the great former Longhorn legend from back in the good old days. Willis, for those who don't know, you are in the Texas Radio Hall of Fame. You're a Hall of Famer, and respectfully so. When you did your morning show on KKDA, Soul 73, you put together a program that was legendary. It was not just the songs. It was not just you being a quote-unquote disc jockey, because you were more than that. You actually impacted lives because you made your morning show and the station itself a community leader. Can you talk about how you're doing the morning show probably prepared you to do this big step of starting JBJ Management?
Yeah, I think that's right, because KKDA was a community-oriented station. It was a station that was in, quote, the hood. It was everywhere.
Sunny South Dallas.
Yeah, I hear people say Sunny South Dallas now, but I remember where that originated. And, you know, we gave away fans in the summer when it was hot, and we created gave away space heaters in the winter when it was cold. We paid bills.
And you saved lives too, because those fans, people were afraid to keep their windows open at night. I'm talking about elderly people, and they needed those box fans to stay alive, basically, because they were too afraid to open their windows because they thought they might get robbed.
No question about it. And so that was just one of the things that we were involved in. But, you know, we had a softball team. We had a church choir.
Mm-hmm.
We had the African-American Heroes Banquet that took place at the St. John Baptist Church on Marcellus. But it was just a number of things. We would get the DART buses to go down to the Dallas Life Foundation on Thanksgiving Day. It was just a number of things, but that community-oriented station was the brainchild of one Chuck Smith, who came from WDIA in Memphis, Tennessee, mm-hmm. where B.B. King and Bobby Bland and you know, Rufus Thomas and all those guys were disc jockeys. Chuck was the Nighthawk, but he brought that kind of culture to Dallas, to KKDA. And I fortunately was hired by Tom Joyner in 1976. And then Tom left to go to work for Ali.
Yeah, Muhammad
and I
Ali.
Ended up doing the morning show, and I stayed there 35 years. And so, it was that community gathering, that collaboration that started this public engagement and getting involved with government officials, having the mayor on our show or Commissioner Price or mm-hmm. Congresswoman Eddie Bernice Johnson. All of that led to probably the beginning of JBJ Management.
And, you know, Willis, it's amazing because literally you had to figure out how to put those things together. There's a song out right now that everybody loves. It's a R&B and country song called Boots on the Ground. You right. literally were boots on the ground, because it wasn't like, okay, you just show up and there was some team that put it all together for you. You literally had to create the relationships and figure out how can we get these ideas into reality.
Yeah, it was. We have a lot of people on our team now, but at that time, man, in 95, it was a one man operation mm-hmm. That led to being able to work with the Interdenominational Ministerial Alliance, or being able to work with the McDonald's Association. Mm-hmm. You know, just different groups. And you know, you pull people together for different causes, but the heart of our company started with public engagement. And so we still do that now. JBJ Management is a public affairs firm that does public engagement, enterprise development, government relations, and we have a technology division. But everything is driven by our public engagement. We're still out there today. We did the census. We did Prop A, that's creating the Dallas Convention Center. So mm-hmm. we do a lot of outreach. And so we're still working with churches. We're still working with a number of community organizations. That's just who I am at heart.
Yeah, for those who don't know, again, we're talking with Willis Johnson, the CEO of JBJ Management. Their approach is rooted in building long-term relationships with government officials, public entities, as well as broadcast, print, and online media, and generating media coverage both for consumer and trade from the people that we all trust. And I like that concept, because again, in 1995, a lot of people weren't doing that. Nowadays, people say, "Oh, we got to do some networking. We got to be able to get together, and we got to meet some people that we might have exchanged emails or a traditional mail with." You took that chance back in 95, and I always say this: people who start small businesses or people who start nonprofits, they're some of the most courageous people in the world, because it's all on you. Tell me the first year, what was that like, and how scary was that, or how confident were you doing it that way?
Not confident at all. I knew that I had to do something, though, mm-hmm. Because what I had already been at KKDA for 20 years, and you can see the handwriting on the wall. That's not something that you're going to inherit, you know. I love Hyman Childs, but I wasn't his child. And mm-hmm. so he was not going to
put you in he wasn't going to allocate you some resources as if you're family.
No.
You were in the trust. No. You were not going to be a trust fund baby.
No, that wasn't going to happen. And so I had to figure out what the next steps would be. And so by being a good friend of Ron Kirk, I remember talking to Ron. People were calling me, "How do I get to the mayor? I need to get to the mayor." And so I kept talking to the mayor. He said, "What you should do is form a consulting firm, because if you do, I'll call you back in 6 minutes. But this person that I don't know, it may take me 6 months. But mm-hmm. if you vet that person, we determine whether we can call him back." And so that's how it all started. And we started doing some outreach for Mayor Kirk. We then expanded out and picked up a small contract with a firm called ACS, which was eventually bought by Xerox.
Really?
But ACS did a lot of the parking meters in Dallas. And so that was our first contract, was with ACS in 1995. And the thing I remember most was the invoice. They wanted a detailed invoice.
Oh my goodness.
Did I talk to? How long did I talk to them? What was the conversation about? And how does it get us an ROI, a return on our investment?
Yeah.
So invoicing at the end of the month was a pain in the butt for me. So eventually I had to get some help with that. And then we started to add on. We picked up a client or two here and there, and here we are 30 years later.
Okay, so tell me, was the big turning point the deal with Parkland? Because, and explain everybody how you guys were involved with the new Parkland Hospital, because I was very blown away and impressed when that whole thing happened.
Yeah, so there was a solicitation that went out to do the technology, and we partnered with Perot Systems.
Mm-hmm.
This is in 2003. We partnered with Perot Systems to do the technology for Parkland. That's the old Parkland. Well, we worked there for 6 years. And in that process, Parkland said they were going to build a new hospital. So because we had developed a relationship with the team at Parkland, we then worked with a firm out of Oakland, California called TCOM, and we partnered with them. And the one thing that they kept telling us, we do not want to open a five-year-old hospital because it was going to take 5 years to build Parkland.
Mm-hmm.
But technology moved a lot. And one of the things that I remember most, Chris, I went and visited the LA County Hospital. And inside the LA County Hospital, they have these big stanchions, these big pillars that kind of hold the hospital up. Well, come to find out, those pillars were originally telephone booths.
Really?
But the telephone booths obviously were outdated because of technology.
Mm-hmm.
And so I reminded our team, we do not want to develop a telephone booth mentality.
Mm-hmm.
We have to have cutting edge technology. And so a guy that has been on my team and I've worked with for 25 of these 30 years is Duke Hamilton. He's over technology, and we worked with this firm out of Oakland and developed the right technology for the new Parkland Hospital that still exists today.
Absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. Again, I'm not totally surprised because, let me go ahead and pull the curtain back. Willis is one of the longest term friends I've had here in Dallas. I first met Willis in 1980 when Chuck Smith hired me.
We
go all the way back working in the same building down the hall from each other for years and years and years.
Yep.
And here we are now. And again, congratulations on 30 years. But let's talk about some of the bigger things that you've done with JBJ. And I say you, it's your team, because how many on staff now? You got an army.
50-ish, something like that. But the things that we've done, like Redbird, Reimagine Redbird
right.
is one of the projects that we're really proud of. My wife met Peter Brodsky in 2009 in Leadership Dallas. We developed a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
By 2016, Peter said, I want to invest in the South. I want to invest into a business. I said, well, how much do you want to invest? He says, I want to put about $5 million into a business. Well, I had to think about that, Chris, because mm-hmm. I was trying to vet the right business because I didn't want him to put $5 million into a business and then, the wrong thing happened. Well, we looked at Lancaster Keith's shopping center, and the guy out of San Antonio would not sell. We ended up talking to the late Miss Edna Pemberton about mm-hmm. Southwest Center Mall, and the owners were in New York. Long story short, Peter ended up putting $9 million into that, And the rest is history. We did probably 80 community meetings. And one of the things that I remember most about that, two things. People wanted Papados at Redbird. That's what they wanted. I mean, they wanted Papados. It didn't matter that there's one
right
down the street on 67. No, we want a Papados. And the other thing that they didn't want was a movie theater.
Really?
Because the older people said, we don't want to go to the movies with our kids. And so we did a lot of research on the front end to figure out what would go in Redbird Mall. The other thing that they wanted most was Starbucks.
Yes.
And we had to convince Starbucks that it would work, that a $4 cup of coffee would sell there, because Magic Johnson had tried Starbucks on that same street across the street several years ago, and it failed. Well, now that Starbucks today that's at Redbird is one of the top Starbucks in the country.
Yes.
The line is forever at Starbucks. So there's Starbucks, there's FootJoy, there's Breakfast Brothers. There's a hotel there now. There is a there's an apartment complex that is a long line of people trying to get in. The Oak Cliff Chambers there. The mall is thriving. So that's one of the things. And UT Southwestern.
Yes, the medical center.
Is at Redbird.
That's right.
And it's the moneymaker. It's the moneymaker for UT Southwestern. Children's there. Parkland is there. So we take pride in the fact that we were instrumental in, with that. We also worked on the Omni Hotel with Jack Matthews. For years, there was no convention center hotel.
That's right. It was always going. People were always checking into the Anatole or some other hotel that was not, quote unquote, actually downtown.
Bingo. And so we worked with Mayor Tom Leppert and developer Jack Matthews on the front end of that. And that hotel now is the number one hotel in Dallas, the Omni Hotel. So nice. That was another project that we were a part of. And so there are a number of projects, you know, but we take pride in Prop A. We were the first African-American consulting firm to be the prime contractor to do the $1 billion convention center. It's now $3 billion, but we passed Prop A with 70% of the vote. That's something that we were also proud of. And so you go on and on. We work with DART right now as their government relations entity. We are managing children's, the pediatric tower. It's a $5 billion tower being built on Harry Hines. We manage all of the contracting for that. We're managing contracting for UT Southwestern. We're on the Inspire Dallas team. We are a partner that's building the Dallas Convention Center. We're working with, and our team is with the Austin Transit Partners down in Austin, Texas, which is their version of DART that will build a rail system from Bergstrom Airport to downtown Austin. So, I mean, we're involved in a lot of projects that we're pretty.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly outside of Cleveland. You know, think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him. And they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right. And the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Proud of.
Oh, I'm proud of everything you're doing. And let's go back to Redbird Reimagined real quick, because we had I had Peter Broski on the show a couple of years ago, and he was actually talking about, he actually brought up your name too. He talked about how he was trying to get done, and he said it's an area that people have a misconception of. He said, I look at all those mega churches up and down I-20, and you know, in the world of business, it's like, where's the money? Well, Redbird location is right there where the money is. There's people in those mega churches. We're talking about side by side by side. There's five or six of them. And he said that's the first thing that caught his eye. And he also wanted to make sure that people understood that this wasn't just, oh, we're just going to do this to do the right thing. It's an opportunity for everyone involved to make economic change and make money for themselves and for their families. And so when he brought that up, I was just thinking, I just started grinning because you talk about Starbucks. I was there when they had the big grand opening right there on the property, right there on Redbird. And then I remember back in the day, and Willis, you know this so well, back in the day, the first ever Chick-fil-A in Dallas was at Redbird inside the mall, and it was the place to be.
That's right. You know, you have to credit Mayor Mike Rawlins a lot for Redbird because it was a part of the Grow South plan that the mayor had. So some of the funding from Civitas went into Redbird with Peter Brodsky. And that was a big piece of that. But he is right. Some of our outreach meetings, we've met with Pastor Kerry Wesley, who's deceased now, but we met with Kerry Wesley from Antioch. We met with Ricky Rush from IBOC. We met Freddie Haynes from Friendship West, Brian Carter from Concord, Dr. Tony Evans from Oak Cliff Bible Fellowship, and Bishop T.D. Jakes from the Potter's House.
They're all right there.
We put all of them in the same room to meet with Peter Brodsky.
Look at
and talk to them about what the vision would be. Because what people don't realize is that Interstate 20 and Wheatland Road at about noon on Sunday is a traffic jam.
It's like going to a Cowboys game at AT&T Stadium. It's traffic like that.
That's exactly right, Chris. There's a ton of, and so when Peter says that, that part of town, Peter and I flew to to LA to Baldwin Hills Mall.
I've been there.
On the upper end of Baldwin Hills is an old school area where celebrities, black celebrities, would live.
Right.
And there's wealth. On the other side of the mall is Crenshaw. And so the two could merge. So we went to Baldwin Hills Mall and picked up some ideas on how to fashion Redbird Mall. Just Peter and I did that. And the next thing you know, we're starting to put some of these ideas together, and that we have Redbird today. And here's the interesting thing to me about Redbird. It's a TIF. There was a barbell TIF that the city put together. Valley View Mall was supposed to financially support Redbird Mall. Well, Redbird is thriving.
Right.
Valley View is empty.
Yeah, it's up in the air. It's like so, they don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah, so it ended up turned out the other way around. But it's
by the way, that might be your next project. JBJ all of a sudden solves the Valley View Mall situation.
Well, I have a project that I'm working on, and I actually saw you, Chris.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we can keep that quiet, but yeah, that's when you saw me. Oh, okay.
So I'm working on a project that will be announced later.
Good. That would be nice. That would be nice. You mentioned the Omni. Let's talk about that just for a minute, because one of the things I really love about, you know, what you've done with JBJ Management is putting people together where everybody wins. And in other words, it's like there's no stereotypes here. It's like, well, this area won't work, or maybe it can. It's like you have to think outside of your comfort zone, or you have to think outside of the box of how you normally do business. And when everybody's involved, everybody wins. So with that being said, I just love the fact that you consider community, you consider the clients, and you seem to match it all up. Your staff is totally diverse. Men, women, young, old, black, white, Hispanic, Asian, everybody's there.
Because that's what America looks like.
Ding, 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 ding.
And so this thing about, well, you know, could we have an all black firm? Sure we could. But that's not how you do business. And so I feel that same way about an all white firm. And so we are deliberately a diverse firm. Mm-hmm. That, and you're right, we have Asian, we have African American, we have Hispanic, we have male, female. It doesn't matter.
I mean, younger, just, older. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So we have a pretty good group. But one of the things that we did with the Omni Hotel was create the joint venture mechanism in Dallas, where you have a prime contractor, but you must have X amount of joint venture partners, who are minority contractors. And Tom Leppert was the creator of that here in Dallas. We did that on the Omni, but it was a domino effect. That same thing worked on Parkland Hospital. The same thing went to DART. The same thing went to DFW Airport, because we went with Mayor Leppert and met with Jeff Fagan, who was the CEO of DFW at the time. We met with Gary Thomas, who was the CEO of DART at the time. We met with Ron Anderson. He was the CEO of Parkland at that time, and said, when you're building these big projects, we have to include everybody. And it's not about, can you, you know, can we find somebody and build up a black firm or build up a Hispanic firm? There are quality firms here who have capabilities. They just need the opportunity to play ball.
That's right.
And so when you do that, that filters down. I applaud Dallas City Manager Kim Tobert. She's working on that right now about using the Dallas County model of SBE, Small Business Enterprise, so that it doesn't matter what color you are, but it does matter that if you have the ability and the opportunity to participate in these projects. Dallas-Fort Worth is growing by leaps and bounds, Chris. And in the next 8 to 10 years, we will surpass Chicago. And so that you will be this largest metropolitan area, the third largest metropolitan area, and it's on steroids. And so that's why it's important that you have quality work, you have quality housing, but you have to have a quality culture so people can feel comfortable about living in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And I'm excited about what I see coming.
Oh, yeah. And you said it so well, because Dallas has always wanted to be a world-class city. I remember Dallas-Fort Worth, this area, North Texas, has always wanted to be world-class, considered themselves world-class. I'm talking about from back in the 80s and the 70s. And, you know, you look at the growth of Atlanta. It's like, oh, wow, they got that airport. And then DFW Airport came along. Well, I'm looking at the fact that people all over the world are moving here. And people in this country, all over the country, are moving here. And as you mentioned, it's going to pass Chicago. And you have to recognize the opportunity and be prepared for the moment. Jimmy Johnson used to say that. He said, there's no such thing as luck. Luck is when preparation meets opportunity. And Willis, I think because your fingerprints and JBJ Management's fingerprints are on all these different entities and different opportunities, and you're doing it the correct way. I just want to know, when do you sleep? Because you're always somewhere doing something.
I sleep a lot more now, Chris, that I'm not on the radio than I did when I was on the radio.
Oh, you had to get up at 3 in the morning all the time back in those days.
Oh, my God. You know how that was.
Oh, yeah.
I know you know. But I have a good team. Noah Dow, who eventually will take the reins here at JBJ. He's 34 years old. He's been here 10 years, though, and he's cut his teeth on JBJ. Stephanie Aguilera, she's Cambodian. She's my right hand. She makes things happen here. Duke Hamilton, he's the only black man I know that majored in physics. He's handling our technology division. Brenna Riston, who I met when I was on the board at the Salvation Army. She is a rock star when it comes to government relations. And so then we have Jake Bro down in Austin. We have opened up our Houston office. My daughter's running our office in Atlanta. We have a good team. We have a solid team. And so I get a chance to just meet with our team, give my thoughts, give my ideas. And it allows me to sleep because they now take and run with that. And then they have their own ideas. I'm learning from them. I'm learning a lot from them.
Well, I'm going to say this. They're learning a lot from you, too, because, again, it's a skill set. I call it surgery. You're a good surgeon as far as putting people together and making things happen where everybody feels involved and not feels like, oh, I got something taken away from me, or how come I wasn't included, or whatever. I think you're really, really good and adept at putting people together and having them feel like they've collaborated, not just what's the phrase where everybody just agreed and say, okay, I'll just agree. No, you've everybody's collaborating and not just settling, basically.
I think that's right, Chris. I think it's important that we all get a chance to be in the room at the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And I think I grew up in the 60s in the South in a segregated neighborhood. I went to a segregated school. So I know what it's like to be pigeonholed. Mm-hmm. I know what it's like to be put in a box. But once you allow great talent to get into the room, good things happen. You know, I liken it to Tiger Woods. We would have never known how good Tiger Woods would be if he could only play at the black golf courses.
Right.
But once Tiger was into the Masters, see, it's a game changer. Mm-hmm. And look what Tiger's athleticism and his prowess has done for the game of golf. That same thing works whether it's in community, business, culture. If you let other people in, we all can be exposed to better talent.
Exactly. With all, I mentioned, you know, Dallas being a world-class city, Dallas-Fort Worth area, the DFW area, North Texas being world-class. The World Cup is going to be here in less than a year. I know you've probably been, your phone's probably been ringing. People have been trying to catch up with you guys to help augment connecting some things. How much of a role are you guys, JBJ, with the World Cup coming to Arlington, at the media center will be at the convention center in Dallas?
So we've had our meetings with Mayor Johnson, Mayor Ross, Mayor Parker. Mayor Ross is of Arlington. I really love him. He's mm-hmm. he's not happy about the Cowboy Stadium being called Dallas Stadium. So
they have to do that for the World Cup. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But we're working closely with Monica Paul. Monica Paul is the go-to person for FIFA. We have an event with her coming up.
And she, by the way, is the president of the Dallas Sports Association.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. So Monica has been very open to creating opportunities for all of Dallas. I just remember former councilwoman Carolyn Arnold, mm-hmm. that it would not be right for this large operation to come to Dallas-Fort Worth and everybody not get a chance to participate. And so we're working with Monica Paul and City Manager Kim Tolbert, City Manager Jay Chapa in Fort Worth, Mayor Ross in Arlington, to try to make sure that there's good outreach and that everybody can play ball.
Exactly. The economic impact is going to be tremendous. It's no going question. To be like 12 Super Bowls within a month in one location.
And so, you know, and so it's a great point. I'm glad you brought that up, Chris, because what's important is that we prepare for that.
Right.
If you have a transportation company, you need to get your hat in the ring. You know, if you have a logistics firm, or if you have dry cleaning, or so it's little things, you know, everybody's looking for that big contract. But there's so many things that go with FIFA mm-hmm. that you could play ball on. And so the more you prepare, the better off you'll be in terms of when FIFA gets here.
Exactly. Willis, let's go back one more time. Let's go back to your childhood. You grew up in East Texas in Gladewater.
The Big G.
The Big G. Did you ever think this is where your life would, even moving to Dallas Fort Worth?
No, man, no. Listen.
What did you think you were going to be when you were a little kid?
I thought I was going to be like Willis Reed. I wanted to be a basketball player. I thought I'd be Willis Reed in the 19 early 70s of the Knickerbockers with Willis Reed and Clyde Frazier and Earl of Pearl Monroe. That's who I thought I was going to be. Well, you have to be halfway decent at basketball. And I wasn't. I was just tall. I had no idea. And I remember, though, I remember getting the call from Tom Joyner. I was working at a place called Gibson's Discount Center. I remember getting the call from Tom Joyner. He said, "Black man." That's his name for me.
Yes. All these years.
Yeah. I mean, so let me go back a little further. I met Tom Joyner on the same day I met Muhammad Ali.
Oh, was that when Tom did that had Ali do an exhibition in Dallas?
They were in Dallas, so I met them both, and I had a conversation with Ali. But because I was in awe of who Tom Joyner was, you have to understand that he, to me today, there's no greater radio personality than the Tom Joyner. He was the guy. He is the godfather of Black radio. So I'm looking at him. There I am. And I could not speak, Chris. I could not speak. Now, remember, I did radio for 35 years. But that day, I couldn't speak. And he said, "Black man, can you talk?" And that's how Black man stuck with me and Tom. And so he let me shadow him for a few weeks. And then he said, "I don't have anything right now, but when I find something, I will." So he called me. He called me in April of 1976. He said, "Black man, I got a job. There's a news opening. You can do news between 10 and 3 on KKDA. I said, "I'll be there tomorrow." He said, No. "Give 2 weeks notice to wherever you're working. Give them time." And so I did. And on May 7th, 1976, I left Gladewater and came to Dallas. And I've been here ever since. Did I know it was going to turn out that way? No. My mother always said to me, "When are you going to get a real job? You can't play records for a living." Because at that time, you know, you're a disc jockey.
Yeah.
You're a disc jockey. So no, Chris, I had no idea. God has truly blessed me. I have a great family. I have a great wife. My kids are great. I got a bunch of grandkids now. I mean, just think about what I'm saying. Grandkids. Somebody sent me a picture of me when I was 23 years old with Steve Ladd. We're giving food away. I had not seen that. And I heard the interview I did on Channel 5. I didn't even sound the same way in 1976 as I do now. And so I owe it all to the grace of God. It's just been, it's been a major blessing. I love this city. I'm never moving. I've had the opportunity to travel to a bunch of countries. My business is good. My family is good. My health is good. It's just by the grace of God, Chris, that we're here today. So no, country boy out of Gladewater? Absolutely not. I saw none of this coming. None of it.
We'll put it like this. The future is going to be even brighter. You got another 30 years plus to enjoy the success. And we are so grateful that you are in North Texas and sharing some of your knowledge and success with JBJ Management. Thanks again, Willis.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate the opportunity.
And I will see you whenever I see you next.
Yes, sir.
And joining us right now is another old friend, Kenton Nelson, Vice President of Events at Texas Motor Speedway. The Speedway Children's Charities and Tony Stewart Racing will be hosting their first ever celebrity bowling event. It will be in Euless at Bolero Euless, right off the airport freeway. In fact, it's coming up, I want to say, October the 8th. Kenton, am I right?
That's right, Chris. Yeah, next Wednesday.
Well, let's
Wednesday.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about this. First of all, how'd you get Tony Stewart to get involved with a bowling event?
Well, it's a funny story. So we've been doing an event, a charity event with Tony for about 15 years. Somehow, some way, he took a liking to Texas and myself and back in the day, Eddie, when he was around. every year, Chris, I mean, literally, I get a phone call from his manager and it says, and he says, okay, I'm working on Tony's calendar. When are we doing the charity event? And I'm like, he's going to do it again? And he's like, yep, he's coming back. So we have raised millions of dollars on just his events alone.
Wow.
It's been a driving school in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had a lot of fun with that. You know, he's driving, you know, drag cars nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
And he's coming into town next week for the races down in Ennis. And a lot of people know this. If you're a big Tony Stewart fan, you probably do. Tony's actually got a bowling alley or bowling lanes in his house.
Get out of here.
Yeah, he sure does. So he's got a couple of lanes in his house in Indiana. And I don't want to say he's a big time bowler, but I hear he's pretty good. So we'll see next Wednesday.
I'll be out there, and you say it's going to be some other quote unquote celebrities going to donate their time, and everybody's going to have a little fun with it.
Yeah, absolutely. We got some of your old cronies that are going to be with us. Mm-hmm. George Reba, Nui Scruggs.
Yeah.
Those guys are coming out. We've got a couple of IndyCar guys. The TCU men's basketball coach confirmed yesterday.
Jamie Dixon.
Yeah, he's coming out.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be fun. Yeah, and then we've got, here's a funny story, right? When I asked Tony a year ago, hey, what do you think about doing a bowling tournament? He starts on his phone like you or I would, going, let me give you this contact. And I'm like, what is he doing over there? And he's like, I sponsor two professional bowlers. So
really?
I'm watching bowling on TV, which I don't typically do. And it wasn't, I mean, I was channel surfing, Chris, and I come across it and they're in the finals. You know how that kind of looks.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be dang if Tony Stewart's logo is not on the back of their jerseys. And I'm like, there's one of his bowlers. So we've actually got 11 professional bowlers. They're going to be a part of the tournament on Wednesday as well. So that'll be a lot of fun.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Fun, and all I could think of when you said this is Tony Stewart, Big Lebinski.
Yeah, right, the right, movie. Exactly. Yeah, no
this
doubt.
Is crazy.
And I think his wife will be there as well. And for the audience, if you don't know, his wife is a professional race car drag racer as well.
Is that right?
Yeah. Leah Pruitt is her name. He just got married a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
They just had their first child together, and both Leah and baby will be along, and we're looking forward to having, you know, a great time out at Bowlero next Wednesday night.
Bowlero and Euless, that's going to be the bowling location for this big Tony Stewart's bowling tournament. Again, the proceeds go to Speedway Children's Charities, and our girl Marissa Cheney, she's the executive director. Speedway Children's Charity, it's a really, really nice nonprofit. Can you tell us just a little bit about Speedway's Children's Charities?
Yeah, absolutely, Chris. You know, it was founded here in Texas in 1997 when we built the Speedway and opened up the Speedway. To date, we've raised over $12 million, 12.4 to be exact.
Mm.
Real proud of that.
Yeah.
And we're real proud that the funding that we raise, the money that we raise, goes right back into the community that we live in, Chris. We support charities in Collin, Dallas, Denton, and Tarrant County. And you know, that's, you know, we're changing kids' lives.
Yeah.
By doing these types of events. And we do a lot of different types of events to raise the money. You know, we have golf tournaments, we have the traditional stuff. We have mm-hmm. golf tournaments, we have clay shoots. We've got a bowling tournament now. We do track laps where fans can come out to the Speedway and drive their own personal car around the racetrack. We have, you know, the 50-50 events like you see, you know, at Mavericks, Rangers,
yes.
Cowboys teams that raise money.
Yes.
So we all pull in the same direction, and you know, it's really cool that so many people in this area give so much back and can help the children in North Texas. So we're real proud of that.
You mentioned Texas Motor Speedway It's coming on what, 40 years in another 30. 2 years? 30? 30. And, yeah, 30 yeah, years 30, in another couple 30 of years.
Years.
Can you talk about back in those days when TMS first got here, Eddie got it together, and then all of a sudden you got on board too. Can you talk about what it was like? Because, you know, racing was always big, but it didn't have a big home here in North Texas until Texas Motor Speedway.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, I've been here for 30 years. Tim and I were talking about that a minute ago, how long he's been up in the Dallas-Fort Worth area at this point. And, yeah, I've been here for 30, and I sat there, you know, and I watched new staff members come in, and we just hired a couple of new people in the marketing department and a couple of new people in the PR department. And I show them old photos and old videos, and it's just like, yeah, I mean, guys, back in 97 till about 2005, there were 200,000 people here, 250,000 people here on a race weekend.
Yes.
I mean, it took the Metroplex by storm, Chris, as you know. I mean, you've been out here a bunch of times. Mm-hmm. You know, you've done a bunch of broadcasts out here. We've even taken you to a couple of racetracks before, if I'm not mistaken, right?
That's right. In fact, I was going to bring that up because we've had some good road trips, so to speak.
Yeah,
I wanted
to
bring up a couple of those.
We've broke bread well together and had a few adult beverages and everything else together and had a lot of good time. But no, it was, you know, it was Bruton Smith and Eddie Gossage's. It was their vision to bring, you know, NASCAR to North Texas. They found this piece of property out here on once upon a time was what was considered far north Fort Worth.
Yeah.
Right. You know, now it's basically connected to Denton.
The growth is amazing.
Nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is nuts. And we've got, I can remember when I had to drive, you know, 10 miles down the road to get a ham sandwich for lunch. And now we got Buc-ee's across the street and a mall, and we got hotels and restaurants, and everything is just like across the street from us nowadays. Mm-hmm. But the fans have really continued to support, you know, what we're doing at Texas Motor Speedway with NASCAR. You know, the sport and the industry has changed a lot. Everybody knows that. We're not getting 200,000 people to these races, but 75,000 to 80,000 people for a NASCAR race. The television ratings are really strong still to date. And, you know, we're kind of in a mode. It's a transition, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have Dale Earnhardt and Jeff Gordon, those household names. You know, you've got Christopher Bell, who's from Norman, Oklahoma.
Yep.
And you've got William Byron and Kyle Larson. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, it just goes through a transition, just like every other league does. LeBron will be done at some point. And, you know, it's going to be, you know, whoever's next.
You mentioned LeBron. I want to interject this. Does it help that Michael Jordan has a team?
Oh, my gosh. Well, it absolutely does. And I don't want to get too much into it. I can't get too much into it. There's actually a lawsuit going on right now, Chris. Oh. I'm not sure if you're aware of that.
No, but tell me.
Yeah, yeah. It's the team that he owns, and I don't, like I said, the details are just far too deep for this conversation, but they're trying to get more of a piece of the pie from NASCAR.
Oh, I got
right?
you.
Yeah. And that's what it's all about. But listen, the fact that Michael Jordan and the team 2311, who he partnered with Denny Hamlin, who drives for Coach Joe Gibbs, you know, don't want to say Washington Commanders or, gosh forbid we say Redskins.
But he's a legendary coach, won some Super Bowls. Yep, won those. And by the way, thank you for introducing me to him.
Yeah, for sure. And that's who Denny drives for. But Denny and Michael, does Michael still own part of the Charlotte Hornets?
I think he just sold. Well, he might own a chunk. I can't imagine him giving all of it away. But he does. He's not the majority owner no more. Yeah.
Yeah, that's where they got connected, Chris, Denny's a big basketball guy. Michael was a Hornets at the time. Those two became friendly, and Michael and his dad, before his dad passed, were big. You know, when you grow up
in Carolinas,
you're a NASCAR fan, right?
That's right. And, I've been out to that speedway.
That's right. That's right. And literally, Michael on pit road, Michael in the suites, Michael, you know, in victory lane when his drivers win. Boy, NASCAR just has got to figure out a way to keep him happy and keep him involved in the sport. It would be I don't want to say it'd be devastating, but you know what I'm saying? It'd be a big hit.
Yeah, yeah, it'd be a loss.
Whatever reason that they were not able to come to terms on some sort of a financial agreement to have him involved. But I love seeing him at the racetrack, and I know the NASCAR fans do too. I mean, I still see Michael Jordan highlights, it seems, on all my social media feeds consistently, right? So that guy is just generational.
Oh yeah, he's generational. And this is funny you mentioned generational, because I'll never forget this. A couple of years ago, it was the 75th anniversary of the NBA, and they had their top 75 players of all time. And of course, Michael Jordan's number one. And this they were honoring them on the same night. It's All-Star Night, the same night that there was a big NASCAR race. And Michael was at the NASCAR race. You saw it on TV. It's like, oh, man, he's going to miss the 75th anniversary. Everybody's like, man, you know, he can't be two places at the same time. That's a damn shame. He knows he's the greatest in basketball, but, you know, he's committed. And who knew that all this was going to happen on the same day?
Yeah.
Lo and behold, he makes it to the celebration and the All-Star game, I think an hour before they started it, and everybody went nuts. So he was able to do both.
That's what that $45 million jet will get you.
Exactly.
it's always, it has been for many, many years, as long as I can remember, the Daytona 500 and the NBA All-Star game are always on the same Sunday.
Yep.
Yeah, or always on the same weekend. Yeah, so that's what that conflict has always been.
Well, we're talking with Kent Nelson. He's the vice president of events at Texas Motor Speedway. And you mentioned Daytona. And this brings up one of my favorite sports stories. I just love this story because you invited me and guys of the G-Bag Nation out to the Daytona Motor Speedway, Daytona Beach, Florida. First time I'd ever been to Daytona. And by the way, thanks for taking care of us in the whole nine yards. You treated us like royalty. And I'll never forget that day because a tornado came to town. And it was the first time the Daytona 500 was run at night because they delayed it. Can you talk about what was going on in your mind? Because we were out there at the racetrack. I was out there with you guys too. And all of a sudden, it's like, here comes a tornado. What are we going to do?
Yeah. Mother Nature and outdoor events are always a challenge, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
We had an event at Atlanta Motor Speedway a couple of months ago, and we were right in the middle of driver intros, and we had lightning strike within an 8-mile radius. And when that happens these days, for safety reasons, right, for the TV camera operators and the fans.
It's like golf, the same thing.
Exactly.
Football, exactly. That's what happened to the Cowboys when they were playing up in, what was the first game of the season?
That's right.
In Philadelphia, it got lightning delayed. Well,
Think about how many East Coast college football games have been delayed so far this year.
Right.
That they've had some storms come through there for whatever reason on Saturdays.
Mm-hmm.
And you look up and you're like, what happened to that game? And it's still the first quarter and it's been delayed for 3 hours, you know, kind of a thing.
Exactly.
That's what happened in Daytona. And the fact that they had lights, you know, and they've got all the jet trucks down there to dry off the track once the storms roll through. You know, we pretty much have to deal with that on a pretty consistent basis. We're prepared for it anyway, Chris, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, we may have the greatest forecast in the world, and you would think there's no reason to bring 8 jet trucks to Las Vegas Motor Speedway this weekend. And lo and behold, you know, a shower pops up.
Right.
With the TV windows and things like that, you can't wait 5 hours.
Right.
If you can go out there and dry the track in 45 minutes, you got to go do it.
Well, and, they got it done. And I'm going to give you credit. I'm going to give me and you credit. You and I were calm and collected. I'm calm and collected because I went to the University of Oklahoma. That's Tornado Alley. In fact, I minored in meteorology.
Right.
So, I'm like, okay, this is exciting. Where meanwhile, there was other people panicking. Oh, my God, here comes the tornado. Let's get back to the hotel.
Yeah. I remember that. It was pretty funny. I think there was one Mike Bassick that had to take his shoes, put them in the dryer at the hotel because they got so wet.
Yeah, he was running. I didn't know he could run that fast.
That's our guy.
And then we went to Tennessee.
We went to Bristol and camped out, right.
That was the most amazing thing, too. That stadium is like straight up and down. I mean, you look down. And everything's in the infield, and normally, like, you know, Texas Motor Speedway, anybody been on Texas Motor Speedway, it's got lots of room in that infield. At Daytona, they got that lake out there, too, you know?
Right.
But in Bristol, I was blown away that it's like a Roman Coliseum or something.
Yeah. Well, you know, they've done college football at Bristol several years ago. And then this summer, you know, they had the Cincinnati Reds and the Atlanta Braves.
They sure did.
Baseball game.
That was amazing.
And then 30 days later, they ran a NASCAR race.
Oh, wow. You
know? So they literally had to get all that baseball, you know, turf and the field and the dugouts and had to get all of that out there, turn that place around. And yeah, NASCAR came to town and they put on, I think it was the Bass Pro Shop 500. So yeah, that facility, you know, we call it the Great Last Coliseum or the Great.
Yeah.
Last Great Coliseum. And it truly is.
It's impressive.
It's a half a mile racetrack, and it's got 150,000 seats, and it literally just goes straight up.
You know what? You mentioned the half mile and all that, Texas Motor Speedway. You let us, G-Bag Nation, about 10, 12 years ago, you know, we were doing this NASCAR in the Nation back then.
Right.
And we did some shows out there, and we used to do this thing with you guys on Friday nights where anybody could bring their car out there.
Yep.
And run it on the track. Was that your idea? Because that was cool.
Bringing all that back around to Speedway Children's Charities, that's kind of what, you know, we like to do is we definitely love for fans to bring guests, you know, people that live in the Metroplex, you know, on you know, we probably do it two or three times still.
Mm-hmm.
We do a lot of car clubs, as you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
The car clubs that we see at, you know, coffee shops on Saturday mornings and, you know, and just in random parking lots. They all hear about it. And, you know, on those given days throughout the course of the year, they'll all come out to the Speedway and pay us, you know, I think we charge like $25, but for charity, people are giving you a $100 bill.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of, it's helping kids.
Yes.
And it's just, it's not like, and no offense to all the other ball and stick sports kind of a thing. It's not as easy for them to say, come out. I mean, I think they come out and run the bases maybe at the ballpark, but they don't get to come out and have batting practice. They don't get to actually go play on the field like you can take your, I mean, it can be your daily driver or it can be, you know, there's a lot of people, you know, that have the old hot rods and the classic cars and things like that, that you'll see them bring out. They like to put the convertible down and let the wind blow through their hair and all that good stuff. So,
okay. Yeah. You just said that. I'm going to ask you the question. Have you ever done that? I say that the only reason I'm bringing that up is because you let us, G-Bag Nation, me and Gavin Dawson, Jeff Cavanaugh, Mike Bassett, and Lucius, you let us go out there on the track in some real race cars and drive them fast. Put a governor on it, but I got up to 148, I believe. I want to know if you've ever done that.
You were quick.
Have you been?
I have. Okay. I've done it. I've done it a handful of times. I've done it a handful of times and I can't get the sensation out of my mind that the rear end of that race car is not going to come around and I'm going to slap the wall. And I don't own the car.
Right.
And I don't want to have to pay for the car.
Right. So right.
I kind of stay right in that 130, 140 range.
Right.
I'd love to be able to get up to 170, 180 like these guys do, but it's just not in my DNA.
Okay.
Just not.
I got another question for you because these are kind of questions that, you know, NASCAR fans like to know. Okay. You've had the races all these years, almost 30 years now. You've had different people, you know, start the race. Gentlemen, start your engines.
Oh, yeah.
Who's the most interesting or the one guy or woman that you were like blown away? We got so-and-so.
We've had a ton of people do it.
Yes.
We've done some really, really cool things. The year that we had Troy Aikman and George Lopez do it, and they did it in English and Spanish.
Wow.
Really, really cool, right?
Mm-hmm.
We've done Dirk Nowitzki did it the year he won the MVP.
Mm-hmm.
My good buddy Steve Lutzen at the Mavericks connected me. And we got Dirk out here.
Mm-hmm.
We've had a lot of celebrities do it, but
Steve Austin.
Yep. That's the one I was getting ready to tell you. So here's the story here's how it goes. We kept that one a secret, right? We didn't tell the fans who it was going to be. And I'm not a big WWE guy, but I get it, right? I mean, I'm a sports promoter. Mm-hmm. I love the passion that those fans have and this, that, and the other. And, you know, since I've met Steve, Stone Cold and been able to go to a few of his events and things like that, I really get it now. But here's what happened. So we're literally right up to the minute of the person that's going to say, driver, start your engines. And we haven't told anybody, and we've got Stone Cold back behind, and we play his walkout music from WWE. And Eddie and I were 30 yards apart from each other. And as soon as the glass breaking sound went out over the 200,000 people that were there, and we both looked at the crowd and they roared, Chris.
Wow. They,
before he ever stepped on the stage,
right?
Stone Cold was coming out.
Wow. And
he was the biggest star that we've ever had do it. Just simply, yeah, obviously the NASCAR fan base and the WWE fan base, there's a lot of crossover with all sports, but that one is, that was a cool moment. And, I talked to Stone Cold. I talked to him when Eddie passed, unfortunately. I talked to him for an hour one day, and, he still talks about coming here and wants to come back sometime. So we'll get him back at some point for sure.
Most definitely. And in the meantime, if you want to hear other great stories from Kenton Nelson, or you want to say hello to Tony Stewart, October the 8th, this coming Wednesday, 5:30 is when the doors open at Bolero. It's the Tony Stewart Bowling Tournament. And check this out. All of it, the proceeds go to Speedway Children's Charity. Hey, thanks again for being with us today, Kenton.
Chris, man, I can appreciate you very much, and look forward to seeing you next Wednesday.
Most definitely. And thank you all for joining us on Better Living, a show about people or organizations having a big impact here in North Texas. I'm Chris Arnold. So long, everybody.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.